this week on the Inside Flap.
I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun, and my wife tolerated it. But it, I look back at pictures from last year, and it aged me about 12 years. You know, I wanted to look like Bert, but I think I ended up looking like Wilford Brimley. So it was, it's gone.
No, it's gone, you know, you can't go Brimley.
Okay, well, a dirt, no, dirt road. Road, dirt road.
Sorry, yeah, very dirt road.
Okay.
And he gives me the, God forbid he should stop his truck, get out, and walk over towards me. No, he gives me the crooked index finger pointed, come here. Come here.
Do you know you've been crooking called to the principal's office?
Yeah. He gives you the come hither.
The come hither.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. And welcome to the show. Seated across the snack shack, to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the floral settee, that's Andrew Dow.
Excelsior.
Welcome back. We got everybody back for, you know, it's been a minute since we've all been back together. Andrew's been gallivanting across the continent, down in Mexico. We've been up in Canada. We're all back, and welcome to episode
The Inside Flap.
256 of the, yeah, that's right, 256 episodes of all three of us together. Well, actually, there might have been one or two where we weren't all three together for a complete episode. But anyway, here we are, episode 256, and we have a great show for you. We are joined by Ace Atkins for a fun chat all about his book, Don't Let the Devil Ride. Now, Ace Atkins, not only does he have a great name, he's also a best-selling author known for the Quinn Colson series, and he was also chosen by Robert B. Parker's family to continue the Spencer series. A while ago, he's written, I think, 10 Spencer novels. His new book out now is called Don't Let the Devil Ride, which I really enjoyed, and we'll have that conversation for you in just a second. But first, so went for a little hike the other day. Now, you know, I'm a teacher. It's summertime.
Dave is living his best life. So, Andrew, I'm a working girl. Not that type of working girl, but I'm a working girl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just realized. Disclaimer. I just realized that was a thing.
Yeah, sure.
That was a thing. So I'm sitting in my office doing CAD or something or other online, and I get a text message from Dave. It's a selfie. He's got his hands out extended, beautiful smile on his face. There's like a, almost like an iceberg looking lake behind you.
Oh,
with
literally an iceberg.
Floating behind him, like a glacial lake with a glacier still in it. Like happy, just living his best life. And I kind of shake my head and...
Well, you know, I get
well, at least one person in the family is having a good day.
I get 2 months out of the year to do that, so I'm going to take advantage of those.
Two months is fantastic,
and it is fantastic.
Did you say 2 months like you thought that wasn't very much?
All right,
that's what I just got.
You know, valid point. All right, I get 2 whole months, 60 days, maybe 70 days, in which to enjoy.
That's great.
These hikes, and yes, you can go to your Facebook. Our Facebook page. Don't go to your listen. Go to your Facebook page.
Dave Medicus living his best life will be there.
Follow at the Inside Flap. How about that? How about you follow at the Inside Flap? And you can see that. But I want to talk about a hike I went on yesterday. So I went up to, and that was from Rocky Mountain National Park, which really you got to get to really see what's going on at Rocky Mountain National Park. You got to get out on the trail and get into the wilderness. Excuse me. Wow. The Fresca is going down the wrong pipe.
Sip of the Fresca. Do you want some water?
No, I'm good. Okay. But that hike, that's a 14 mile hike. So really get into it if you want to get out to see what's going on at Rocky Mountain. But yesterday went to a place. Now, I wanted to go hike Gray Wolf Mountain.
Wow.
Great name. in the Chicago Lakes area near Idaho Springs here in Colorado. Wasn't paying attention to my GPS and ended up going to the wrong road. Took a wrong turn up Mount. You, by the way, do you know it's not Mount Evans anymore?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I don't know what it's called, but I do know Evans was a racist, evidently. Right. Yeah,
a horrible guy who was, I guess, a governor here in Colorado. But for forever, it was.
Do you know what the name of the new mountain is?
Mount Blue Sky.
Oh, that's Blue Sky. That's beautiful. Okay.
So when you're going up 70, now it says, instead of saying Mount Evans Road, it says Mount Blue Sky.
Okay. It'll take me a few years, but I'll get it. I'll get it.
Yeah. So I got a little discombobulated. Anyway, took the wrong turn, ended up at another.
I can see why you would, because you're like, what's Mount Blue Sky?
Right. But, well, that actually, it shouldn't have even been that, because this is still a little ways up the road.
I see.
And I took the, ended up at a trail called Hell's Hole, which is also in the Chicago Lakes area. But it struck me, it's funny that how many places, and we're just watching that show set in Alaska, the race with
they got Race to Survive Alaska.
Right. But they're always on the lookout for the Devil's, what is it called?
Devil's Club.
The Devil's Club plant.
Yeah.
But how many plants, how many geological places, how many trailheads are named after either the devil or they're named after hell? This was Hell's Hole Trail, right next to Devil's Nose Mountain.
But to say, there's a lot.
Yeah.
There is a lot.
There's Devil's Thumb.
Devil's Thumb.
So many.
There's a Devil's Trail or something out in Castle Rock.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a lot of hell. There's a lot of the use of the hell. I've seen that in numerous things.
And we don't even have to go any further than the author on this week. His book is called Don't Let the Devil Ride. John Vircher, we just had him on. Devil is Fine. A lot of devil stuff going on.
Yeah. And you would think with the way this country leans, you'd have like Jesus Mountain or Christ
Angel.
Mountain. Yeah. Or Angel. Yeah.
Gabriel.
No. We go dark.
The other way. Yeah. We go dark. I was thinking that too.
I feel like it's 20-1 in favor of the devil. The devil is clearly winning right now. You get Devil's Tower.
We don't have Mount Matthew, Mount Luke, Mark.
No.
All the apostles.
So what Jesus needs to do is he needs to fire his marketing team. he needs to hire the devil's marketing team.
You're right.
Why even Devil's? So you got Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Oh yeah,
very famous. You could see that in Close Encounters of the Third Kind with Richard Dreyfuss.
Timely,
very timely. Thank you, Steven Spielberg, 1978. But you know what it's called in the the Lakota language? It's brown buffalo horn.
Really?
Yes. Devil's Tower is brown buffalo horn.
Huh.
And then there's also, I was reading on Reddit, you can hop on Reddit, and I would recommend you never go on Reddit, but if you do,
I'm on Reddit more and more as I get older.
There is a lake in Wisconsin, it's called Devil's Lake, but to the native Ho-Chunk people, it's called Spirit Lake.
Mm. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, doesn't that sound like a lot nicer place than Devil's
Lake? Spirit in the sky, I like that, that's pretty.
But in any case, so I'm hiking, I find myself on Hell's Hole Trail, and I'm hiking.
I'm sure it's lovely.
And it's beautiful. Well, actually, it is really beautiful. The whole first mile is through an aspen grove, an aspen stand, you would call it, a stand of aspen trees. And I'm hiking through there, beautiful. And then I see, once the aspens start to dissipate, to my right, there's another stand of aspens, and it's off the trail. But because I use the All Trails app, and this was a big shout out to All Trails. So if you're out and hiking, get the All Trails app. Even if you don't have cell service, it uses satellite with your phone. And you can literally you can watch yourself on the phone. Even there's no service. You're in the middle of nowhere. There's no service. It doesn't matter. You can. It brings up the trail if you've downloaded the map ahead of time, and you can watch yourself. You're a little blue dot, and it follows along the trail. And if you're not paying attention and you get off the trail, it even sends you an alert. So it's a great app. So I see on my app that on the other side of this aspen stand, there is a lake. I said, aha, well, this looks delightful. Let me go check out this lake. So I get off the trail and I cut up through the stand of aspen trees and it's straight uphill. And you can see also on the map, the topographical topo lines. And you go straight up. And there's a nice little lake there, and I go to the lake, and I walk around the lake a little bit, and then I pull out my map, and I'm thinking, let me go back on the trail oh, au contraire, there's another bigger lake just a few topographical lines up.
This makes me nervous.
So I said, well, let me check out.
Because you're off the trail. There's no trail now?
Well, I can see on this other lake that there's not only a trail, but there's a road going around this other one. So, okay. Well, let me go check out this other lake.
Okay.
So, and it's always great to see a lake. So I go up to this other lake and, yeah, get through the trees. And there's there's a big lake. And there's a big road going through it. And immediately my hackles are kind of raised because when you're out in the middle of nowhere and there's only one road coming to the trailhead, something's a little bit off. Why would there be another road out here in the middle of nowhere? I'm thinking.
Did it come in from another direction?
No, because the other direction is a 14,000-foot mountain, Mount Blue Sky. So, no, it's not coming from another direction. And
Other reason I can think of is I'm sure what you're going to tell us next.
So, right, exactly. And any astute listener will probably pick up on this immediately. So I'm walking along this road, and yes, it's going around the lake, and I'm enjoying it, and I look off, and then I see a house tucked away in the trees, mm-hmm. and then I see another house, and that's when my hackles are really raised, and that's when I see a pickup truck coming around the bend. And the pickup truck comes around the bend. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Here I am in the middle of nowhere on my hike.
Is this where you start running?
Well, and this is just the thing. You have two instincts. You can either run or you can just face the music. So the truck stops. Like, just comes to a dead standstill, and I'm walking in the middle of the road.
Did you hear the dogs before they reached you?
There are no dogs. No, okay. I do not hear any dogs. But I look over to the truck, and it's like some old, you know, beat-up pickup truck. And the guy behind the wheel, well, I guess you might have seen the movie Deliverance. You know, maybe you might describe me, or maybe you're familiar with the old show Grizzly Adams. Mm. The guy's got a big, silvery, bushy beard. And there's also someone else in the pickup truck I can see.
Male or female next to him?
A male.
Okay.
Male
next to him. That's not good. That's not good.
And I stop, and he's probably, you know, 25 yards away from me, and we're both stopped at this point.
Is this a paved road?
No.
Okay, well, a dirt road.
Sorry, yeah, very dirt road.
Okay.
And he gives me the, and no, God forbid he should stop his truck, get out, and walk over towards me. No, he gives me the crooked index finger pointed, come here.
Do you know you've been crooking called to the principal's office? Yeah.
He gives you the come hither.
The come hither gesture with his index finger. And that is it's funny you should say that. That is exactly what I was thinking of. Oh, here I am back in Mr.
It's
Andrew,
the principal's office.
Were you in Mr. Waits? You remember Mr. Waits, right? Yeah. How many times did I get kicked out of that guy's class? I'm getting called to the principal's office. So at this point, I'm like, all right, I know I'm trespassing. Obviously, I'm trespassing.
Had you seen any signs?
No, of course not, because I bushwhacked. You can see how cut up my legs are. Oh. I cut straight up through the woods.
So hang on. So even if that's the case, there's supposed to be like blue marks on the trees. It's supposed to still be marked.
No, because they would have to mark like every.
And they usually
but that's
do.
The law.
They usually
and that's,
do.
Well, that's the law. They would have to mark it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I found on my way back.
Oh.
So he.
I mean, it's a make my day state.
Gives me it is. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Don't think I don't know that. So that is why I decided instead of running and ducking back into the woods,
you're gonna.
And heading, I walked over towards him.
Yeah.
And I got. Now listen, let me paint a picture for you. I got my hat on, but I got it on backwards because I'm cutting through the woods and there's branches and stuff. And
you also, had your backpack on, though.
It's very comfortable. I had my backpack on.
So you look like a hiker.
And I had my mirrored Deion Sanders primetime gold mirrored sunglasses on. So I walk over to him.
You look like an old douchebag then.
And yeah, exactly. Like an old douchebag. And this is what he says to me. He says, I got two questions. I don't know why. He doesn't have a southern accent. I'm about to give him a southern accent. Yeah. I don't know why. He says, two questions. What's your name and what are you doing here? Well, first of all, there's a lot going. We could really unpack those two statements because there's many things. what does it matter what my name is? Mm. And he obviously knows what I'm doing there. I'm trespassing on his property. So I said, hey. And I really, I'm trying to think of, I was trying to think of like a fake name. Should I give him? But my brain, I was like, no, let me just, I give him my name. I said, I'm Dave. And I'm out for a hike. I cut through. I said there was a lake. Now I'm not gonna lie to him.
I wouldn't have lied. I would have told him the truth.
So I was like, I saw on my app there's a lake up here, and I was heading to the lake. And I literally pull out my All Trails map, and I'm showing him.
Yeah.
On my phone, what I don't even know if he's ever seen it. Phone before. Oh. He's got a flannel shirt on. The guy next to him, he's got like overalls. He's got long, you know, he's got like boots on. I mean, these are mountain people.
Yeah.
I saw him. I said, look, here, I came off the trail up here. And then he looks at me and goes, yeah, everybody does it.
Oh.
Okay.
So they get people walking through?
Right. So what are we talking about here? Everybody does it. What's the problem? Is what I want to say to him. Okay. Maybe don't live half a mile away from a major trail called Hell's Hole.
It's probably their family's land, and they've had it. Yeah. They need to run some more signs.
Right. So I said, all right, you know, I'm not going to apologize. I didn't apologize. I said, okay.
No, you didn't apologize.
No. What?
Men don't like to apologize.
I'm not going
to
apologize to the guy. No. I'm out for a hike.
Men don't.
I said, all right. And he goes, this is what I need you to do. Now, you know, it's okay.
Go
what
back
you,
and
what
tell-
he needs me to do.
Yeah.
Turn around, go back. Again, I'm sorry for this. He doesn't have a
southern accent.
Go back down the road. When you get to the gate, duck under the gate, and then go back to where you came. Yeah, and then I'm thinking, I don't even have any idea what gate he's talking about, because again, I bushwhacked through the woods and got up to this place, but I was like, okay. And then I was, see ya. And then again, I tried to hold up my phone. I said, I did, you can see I was on the trail and I came up, and he's just like looking at me. Turn around. I took like 5 steps and then I just took a hard right into the woods. And then like the truck never drove past. So I guess he was just standing there watching me.
He watched you disappear into the woods and disobey what he said?
Sitting in his truck.
Huh.
Well, so the thing is, a lot of people living in a situation like that, they could be like growing marijuana.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff. And where are they going to grow it? They're going to grow it like up in the woods, a few plants here, a few plants there. I mean, they could have a still up there in the woods.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't know.
That's true.
All of this is true that Andrew says.
You know, and the
good
thing
point.
Is, that's why he wants you on the road, because more than likely, if you want on the other side of the lake, that's really...
Well, that's where the real...
That's where the real excitement is.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he could have women chained up there. You don't know what he's got.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know?
And his buddy. And the thing is, the weird thing is, his buddy, and I would... kind of darted my eyes over to his buddy, had like a weird smile on his face the whole time.
Oh.
And I could never figure out if he was...
sympathetic?
Sympathetic, if he's laughing at me, if he's laughing at his buddy, or if he's just like...
Simple?
Yeah, well, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thought that I had.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it was the same kind of weird smile that he had on his face the whole time.
So did you ever see any fencing or...
Yeah, so then, well, exactly. So then I ducked back in the woods.
Okay.
And I pulled up my app. And again, it's beautiful. It's a great all trails.
You have plugged it.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
Cut through the woods. First, I come across 5. Not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4. 5 canoes.
Oh.
Aluminum canoes. In the middle of the woods, no road anywhere, because I'm going straight through the woods. 5 old aluminum canoes,
okay.
Maybe 30 or 40 years old, sitting there in the woods.
Yeah, maybe they had a summer camp or something.
That was
there.
Weird. Yeah, maybe. And then I got past that, and then past that, yes, was an old, rusted, broken down, and I just walked over it, because at this point it was on the ground, barbed wire fence.
Oh.
And then you could see once it when it was in place, it was had like two strands of barbed wire.
And you can look it up, but if you own property, like you are required to post no trespassing, no hunting, no trespassing.
No, yeah, you see those signs all the time.
If you don't want people on your property, you're supposed to post stuff. And the rules are very specific, like at so many yards, you paint a blue stripe. And I don't know what color it is. Maybe it's blue. Maybe it's something else. Yeah. But there are very specific laws. And if these guys don't want people trespassing, go paint the damn, go paint the stripes on the trees.
Yeah, right.
So and people know.
Well, I'm here to tell you 100%. When I cut up from, cut up through that beautiful and that beautiful aspen stand, did not see a single sign. Did not see the fence there. Did not see any markings on any trees, whatever.
Did he have a gun rack in the back of the pickup? Did you notice that?
Did not
that?
Notice. I was too busy, kind of freaked out with his bushy beard.
What did the houses look like that you saw?
Old. And one, in fact, had some kind of camp sign on it and plywood over the windows.
Oh, so it was an old...
So I think it was like an old camp.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
You imagine?
Yeah.
At night?
But there were also a couple... interspersed with that, there were a couple of normal, just normal old houses there, and it looked like there might have been other people living there.
Weird.
Might have been a small community, compound. A small hamlet,
a compound,
a cult, perhaps. Marijuana, cocaine, who knows? But anyway, Hell's Hole Trail. Don't veer off the trail.
Wow,
would be my recommendation.
Hmm. Yeah, it's the number of advice for anybody hiking is stay on the trail. And I will say, I mean, what Dave's doing is somewhat responsible with the app.
Yeah, it is.
It is somewhat.
You can tell you're not going to drop off a ravine. Yeah. You're looking.
Well, and that's the thing is, if you're hiking,
no, you got to have an app.
If you're hiking where there are elevations, you need to pay attention to where you are. And places like Hawaii, like the number one thing that kills tourists in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Is people take a step off of a trail.
Yeah.
And because everything is so lush, you could walk 2 feet off of a trail and fall 3,000 feet to your death.
Yep.
Wow.
Number one cause of like fatalities for tourists in Hawaii is venturing off the trail.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And spoiled coconut milk.
That too.
Yeah, but Laura, how have you been?
Oh, I've been good. My work is really, really booked. I'm busy, to use Andrew's word.
So stealing a page out of the
Here's
Andrew
the
Dowd
funny thing is, I tried to set myself up for like an easier summer. So I was like, I'm not going to take as many clients. I'm going to say no. I'm going to put people off, like not put them off their feed or anything, but like say, hey, I can't start till September. Like be more careful about how I stagger my jobs.
Right.
And I did all that, and I have said no to nice jobs, some of them really good jobs. And thank goodness I did, because the ones I have are heating up. It's just the level of detail when you get higher end. Mm. And so I would say that as my career has grown and I've gotten older, my clients get higher and higher end.
So let me ask you this. As your clients get more and more on the higher end, do they get nicer? Because we found as the authors, as they get more and more famous, they get nicer.
No.
Oh.
They're not necessarily, I wouldn't say that they're mean. I am blessed with really nice clients.
Yes.
I have great clients, actually.
You're always talking
so
about
I wouldn't
that.
Say that they're nicer, because universally I have very nice, wonderful clients.
But they get more particular.
Right. Yeah, yeah, which is their right. They have the money. They can get what they want. They know they can get what they want. And it's the amount of detail that is involved to help them get what they want.
Do they want to be more in control of the project?
That is a great question.
Thank you.
No, I don't think so. The projects are too big, which is why I would get hired to help.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So the control doesn't seem to be it. They're also professional. Most of my clients are professional people. They get hired by other people to do stuff. They hire me.
So they get it.
They hire professionals and they expect you to do your job. Yeah. Okay. But they're really nice. Yeah, I really do. Vast majority of my clients are wonderful. I will say, though, I didn't think I'd say this, but the higher end that I get, the less that I want it from my own house, which is a blessing to you, Dave Medicus.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Tell me more.
Because I don't see these, 5 foot of refrigeration and freezer.
Oh, man.
I don't look at that and think I need that. Mm-hmm. I think, just a 30-inch fridge is fine. I don't need anything that.
My wife has expensive taste.
Yeah, she does. She definitely does.
And we
well documented.
And with Laura, we remodeled this entire house.
Beautiful.
We did a beautiful,
beautiful
kitchen.
Beautiful home.
And we put one of these Sub-Zero fridges in.
Yeah.
Now, this Sub-Zero fridge probably costs like $12,000 just
it
for
did.
The fridge.
They do. They cost $12,000. Wow. Yeah.
It probably costs an extra $4,000 to
put
get
the panels
to
on.
Get the panels
yep.
on it, right?
If you do the Sub-Zero and you pay the $12,000, you're going to do the panels. And yep. panels are cabinet panels that make it look yep. like it's part of your cabinet.
So now, so we're talking, yeah. for one fridge, we paid like $16,000-$17,000,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would think, oh, am I getting an extra large fridge for that money? No.
Oh, no.
It's exactly
it's
the counter opposite.
It's counter depth. It's counter smaller. Depth.
Yeah, it's smaller.
Yeah.
So not only are you spending, you know, let's do the math, seven, eight times what you would pay with a normal fridge.
Yes.
You are getting less freaking space.
Yes. Which is why then I have people who buy a 3 foot wide refrigerator, 3 feet, and then a 2 foot wide refrigerator, because in order to make that up, the depth, you got to go bigger.
Oh, right.
And then you add a 4 foot wide stove. That's 9 foot of linear yep. feet that I got to put into a home. In addition to ice makers,
yeah.
multiple dishwashers.
So I argued against the Sub-Zero in our old house.
It helps sell a house. Mm-hmm. Right? I will say people who in that price bracket, if they, you yep. can put it on the listing.
So I saw, you know, I argued against it.
Yeah.
How'd that argument
and
go
I,
for
I
you?
Did not win it. No. I did not win it.
Most husbands don't, Andrew.
Right. But when it came to the new house, you know, I basically said, look,
yeah.
you know, we're trying to save the money here.
Yeah.
But basically what we would pay for one freaking counter depth fridge
yeah.
is going to pay for all the appliances and then some.
Yeah.
It, right, because that's essentially what it is. So we bought...
It's a semester at a state college, to put that in perspective.
Yeah. We bought two normal, brand new fridges. We bought two sets of washers and dryers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we got other appliances or whatever. But like I said, the total cost of all of that was well under $10,000. You know, for brand new state-of-the-art
yeah.
washers and dryers
yeah.
and two brand new fridges. For half of what we would have paid for, you know, like one of these fridges. So, like, I get it. And that's one example.
Yeah.
But
it's a good example, though. Yeah. And it's an example that I see over and over again. And I am to the point where I like our simple kitchen. I'm fine with we literally have a 30-inch wide refrigerator freezer yeah. in our kitchen right now. It's fine. I have a 30-inch electrical stove. It's not fancy. It does the trick. It's absolutely fine. Of course, I'm not a French chef.
No, we're no Julia.
Andrew's wife, she bakes a lot. It wouldn't work for her. It's not the best oven in the world. It's a little over hot. Whatever. Doesn't matter for me. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I like that simple life. So the older I get, the more that like simple life. There's a quote which I really like: "Settle for less, enjoy it more." I like that quote. Yeah. It just keeps resonating with me. And then I keep thinking, am I in the right profession?
I mean, those...
But I do like things that look pretty. Sure. So I like That's making true. Things look pretty.
Those French fries we had baked up very nicely in the oven.
There you
the
go.
Night.
That's our...
Very nice.
There you go. The quesadillas that you made on the stove, it's fine.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But the other part of my job that I also like is I work in a lot of old homes. So then I get ghost stories too.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never seen a ghost. I don't know if they exist. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I would really like to have experienced one. Ghosts, if you're out there, just
are you
not.
If you're listening,
okay.
Not once.
Not between the hours of midnight, 11:30 p.m.
Well, those are ghost
and 4:30 a.m.
Those are ghosts. They're not going to come at 7 o'clock.
If
in the morning.
You will, that's what I would prefer.
How come
11:30.
No one has ever seen a ghost at 7 o'clock in the morning.
So that's what I want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen ghosts.
You've had experiences. I love.
And I've had
about
experiences. And the thing is,
was it at 7 o'clock in the morning?
No. And
they're
and,
always at night.
And there was one early in the morning, that was but
early like, in the morning still scary.
It was still like
yeah.
It was still interesting what happened, but you know like the one example I have like you just can't explain what I saw. Science can't explain.
I would love to have something like that.
What I saw. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And I love hearing it. So depending on the client in this one, I have a woman who lives near your school, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
In one of those beautiful old Denver squares, probably turn of the century house. And she had a woman she knows who she doesn't know the woman, but she knows the history of the home. And the woman broke her neck on her stairs, the Ooh. Stairs that are in the home.
Ooh.
And she will hear, not all the time, every once in a while at night, the sound of someone on the stairs. Mm-hmm. And there's no one else in the house. She lives by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder if she had not known that this woman had broken her neck on these stairs.
She can hear people, she hears someone moving, literally moving. But you're right. Maybe it's from another part of the home. I would agree with you. An imagination is great.
Well, and another like ghost story I can tell you is mm-hmm. I had bought and renovated an old house built in like 1928
mm-hmm.
and maybe 1920, something like that. In any case, one night I'm alone in the house. I'm sitting on the sofa in the living room. And basically, you know, and these are wooden floors. It's basically a single family house. Like, there's nobody else in the house. There's no neighbors, whatever. Yeah. It's like, I'm in the house. I think I had a pet at that time. But anyways, I hear something walking across the floor. And it was like something that weighed 300 pounds. And it was footsteps. Creak, wow. Approaching me to where I sat on the couch.
I have heard a story like that. My hardwood floor guy told me a story like this.
Yeah, and I got up. Yeah. I ran upstairs. I ducked under the blankets.
Yeah.
And you know, I basically tried to ignore what was going on, but...
Wow. Did you turn around to see what it was?
Well, I was looking and
you could see it and there was nothing there.
I didn't
see
anything, but you could hear. Mm. And like I said, it wasn't like some little petite person was coming across the floor. I mean, this was like, wow. You know, this was like LeBron James is walking across the darn floor. I mean, there was no mistaking.
Wow.
That something was there. That wasn't the only experience in that house, and you know, so I don't know.
That's a good Dave. Have you ever? You've never had anything?
No.
Yeah.
But LeBron James does a lot of traveling.
That's funny.
And if you want to see some more traveling, hey, and you're in the Denver area, come over to Park Hill for our 4th of July parade. Mm. That I guess I've been roped into helping out.
That's right. So. Yeah. Come on over. Sylvia and I are going to be cheering, looking for you on the float.
Yep. Right along 23rd Avenue, I guess, right down Park Hill.
Check it out. Beautiful part.
4th of July will be, I guess we'll all be dressed like pirates. So check that out.
And so I'll keep my story.
Oh, yeah.
I'll keep it brief.
Go as long as you want.
But this is the part of the summer where all our kids are at summer camp. But we actually go and start picking them up. And we've got to pick them up at three different locations and three different times. Like over the next 3 weeks, we start picking them up. Over the next 2 weeks, we start picking them up. So Katie leaves tomorrow to go and pick up Peter in St. Louis. You know, so it's...
She's flying out and then flying back. Yeah,
yep, I'm flying back. You know, so that's starting. Now, I basically am looking to make the transition to being a school teacher.
That's right.
And I've invested a lot of time...
Studying
and everything like that.
Andrew was showing me when he was in Mexico. He showed me they got a double suite, and he showed me there's a desk there, and he had his study guide. So
you got
to
do it.
I'm curious to hear because he's got a pass in order for him to get this gig, and it's a paid internship for 1 year where he can
sounds awesome
study under
and terrifying.
Another teacher to become a teacher. He's got to pass the science test, the praxis it's called.
Yeah, and so it's a residency, and so we'll talk a little bit about it. This will not be the episode where we go
deep,
where we talk about that. But I've been studying, I'm making progress. There's a chance, but there's also a chance it's going to go horribly wrong.
You got to pass it.
Everything in life, though. Yeah.
But I'm basically making the investment and everything. And the thing is, I don't necessarily have to pass this test. Would be good if I do. And I can tell you... If I don't pass it...
You can take it a couple times, can't you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You got to pass it.
Not necessarily. We won't go into the details. But anyways, at some point, I need to pass it.
Okay,
Yeah. So, but part of it comes down to is...
He can take the bar as many times as he wants.
If I don't pass
maybe
it...
Maybe he takes the baby praxis.
If I don't pass it, it's going to be like super close.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you, I'm good enough now that I should pass it, and I've got a whole week to
just
study.
It depends on the questions they throw at you.
Well, and that's and I'll tell you, for example, like some of the practice exams, I've scored like 85% and stuff on it, right? And I'm still studying aggressively. But then I took one another practice exam where the questions were nothing like what I basically had prepared for, right? And some of these things, like, you're not allowed to have a calculator. And some of these things that basically, you know, it's like the speed of light calculations and how long is it going to take you to travel to the other side of the freaking galaxy? And you've got to calculate that, on a dry erase board.
So having taken one of these tests, and I did it to get my phys ed exam, there are 200 questions. I don't remember. Is it a time test?
Yes.
I can't remember. Okay, it
You're
is
damn right. It's a time test. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So what you have to do, because he's got to score a 70% or higher, correct?
Yeah. 71, I think.
So you got to kind of know when to fish or cut bait on some of these questions.
Oh, I understand.
So if it's like a really tough question.
So he could go through, hit the ones that he knows for sure, and then come back.
And then come back.
I don't know that you can come back.
Oh.
I don't know that there's any going back.
Because yeah, it's online.
It's all online. And I don't, maybe you might be right. I don't remember how it works.
You have to take them as they come.
So then you do have to really know when to fish or cut bait.
When that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can obviously get 30% of the questions wrong.
Yeah, and some of the questions.
You just have to know which 30% to get wrong.
I know it's those two. I know it's those two answers.
Yeah.
But which of those two, I don't know.
And you don't know which. And science, I mean.
So we'll see.
You got biology, physics, you got all kinds of.
So I think it's going to work out. But
you hope it's going to work out.
Yeah, and I hope it's going to work out, but we'll see. And the thing is,
when are you taking the first praxis?
You mean the actual
today
test?
Today is
July 7th is when I've scheduled to take
it. Oh, that's soon.
It's the next Sunday.
Today's June 26th.
That's real soon.
Andrew and I are getting ready to take a little road trip together.
Andrew.
You're not going to be studying.
I've got stuff printed out to study.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah.
I'm teasing.
He's going to be driving.
You're going to be quizzing him, Dave.
Yeah. No, he will not.
Well, you
be
go down the road.
Yeah. We're not going there.
I was ready to quit. We're going up to Wyoming. No quizzing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No quizzing. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So we'll see how it goes. But what I will say is, I have two of my best friends, Dave Medicus and Kevin Mason. Mm-hmm. Kevin is a fan of the show.
Oh, is really? He? Okay, he so is. This is the guy, we're going to pick him up tonight at the airport.
Did you meet him in grad school? Is
in
that
grad
right?
school. Yeah,
and I have never met Kevin Mason.
No, no. And
worlds
so,
are colliding.
Yeah, it'll be
exactly.
interesting.
Worlds are colliding.
And let's just say Dave and Kevin are two friends that I can count on to bust my balls.
Okay, oh,
right?
Andrew.
Yeah.
Why? Wow, I don't get those two together.
Yeah, well, that's going to be, it'll be interesting.
You'll be two on one. This could be dangerous for Andrew.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens now. But we should have some fun. I get to play my one round of golf for the year.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've got, a steak dinner lined up. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Should be a lot
Where
of fun.
Where in Wyoming?
Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Cheyenne.
So we're actually leaving tonight at midnight. Midnight?
We're going to leave at 11:30.
Cheyenne's the first big city you hit when you go over on I-25, the Colorado border.
It's 2 hours,
is it right?
It's 2 hours from here without traffic.
And it's like kind of right over, yeah.
Right over the border.
And the airport's on the way.
Okay,
Sort that's what I told Kevin. I was like, well, there's no point in picking you up and then heading back. I'm like, we'll just go
Head
to Cheyenne.
Up. Okay.
So we're going to go, we're going to check out steakhouse, we're going to play a round of golf, then we're going to go down to Blackhawk here. Should be a good time.
Little hiking, not a 13, 14 mile hike, no.
We'll take a, cut through some private property, go over a barbed wire fence, and talk to Grizzly Adams.
Yeah.
You wish it was. Grizzly Adams was friendly, if I remember right.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I guess I never saw the show.
I feel like I watched it when I was a kid, but I could be wrong. I might have watched
Andrew,
it when
you ever see the show? But I'm sure he is friendly. But a grizzly bear is not friendly. So it's weird they would call
him. I thought he was a friendly guy, though.
Grizzly Adams, I think generally speaking. And the thing is, like, this guy could have been a little nicer about
I agreed.
Your whole situation.
He sounded like a jerk.
He was a complete a-hole, and there's no reason for him to. Hey, buddy, you're
it
on.
It sounds very
this is private
theatrical.
Property is all he had to say. It really was.
Overly
with
theatrical.
The whole right off the bat with the crooked finger. Hey, buddy, you want to talk to me? Get out of your
what
truck.
What if you were a woman hiker? So,
don't
what would
make
he have
me
done? What do you think?
So I tell you, I had
don't
a funny,
make me come to you. Why do I got to come to you?
So speaking of a-holes, I had a funny thing happen today.
Oh, we love talking about a-holes.
So, I worked in software, right? A lot of this fraud and everything has a lot to do with it. And when you work for these tech companies, there's a lot they do to make sure that, like, they're not defrauded, right? So I get a message from somebody today basically saying, hey, this is Dan so-and-so. I am the CEO of this, of, you know, it doesn't say this, but I know he's the CEO of the company I used to work for.
Okay.
Right? And he's like, hey, how you doing? I got a favor I need to ask of you, right? And what happens is a lot of people are like, oh man, the CEO is reaching out to me. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can help him, right? And so I haven't worked for this company for a few months. And so anyways, I'm like, oh man, let me string this guy along.
Oh.
And so I do. I string him along. I'm like, oh yeah. He's like, I need you to go to Best Buy and I need you to buy some gift cards.
What?
Oh, I've heard that scam.
Well,
but oh, I know. Okay.
Yeah. So the thing is, there's a scam.
Yep.
But what you'll find most often, it's tech companies testing to see if their employees are basically like smart enough,
if they'll fall for the scam.
And so I'm thinking, man, this is going to make the people I worked for look real good if I fall for the scam. So I strung them along with the scam. And then, you know, after like 15 text messages, I'm like, oh, by the way, you know, I don't work for that company anymore. So you may need to update you probably need to update your list, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
That is one, because this other podcast that we listened to, they had, they do a whole podcast media, and one of the interns fell for that. And yeah. Bought them, and here's what I know, the only reason he stopped, because he at the store he's like, oh, I don't know how he had a question about buying the individual gift cards, and so texted his boss saying, asking this detailed question. He's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And that was probably 2 years ago.
Yep. All right. Well, there's a lot of scams out there. Here is something that is not a scam. Ace Atkins' new book, Don't Let the Devil Ride. Man, this is a good one. It is a standalone book, and I had a lot of fun reading this one. It's funny. It is a Southern noir, jam-packed with eccentric characters and a globe-hopping crime plot. What is not to like? So the story concerns a woman named Addison. Now, when her husband doesn't show up at home, she calls his office to inquire after him, only to find out that the office doesn't even exist. Seems like there's more going on with her husband than she thought, so she hires a private investigator to track him down. We also meet up with a woman named Joanna, who once starred in an Elvis movie. She gets caught up in the disappearance. Turns out to be related to some kind of international crime scandal, perhaps some arms dealings. The dialogue is great in this one. There's a ton of comedy, laugh out loud moments, a lot of fun, plus plenty of action and intrigue along the way. So here now, talking about his book, Don't Let the Devil Ride. This is Ace Atkins. Who takes all, and he strikes like
thunderbolt. Are you down in Oxford? Are you in Oxford?
I am in Oxford.
Very good. I talked to William Boyle. I see you're friends with him. He's I'm a big fan of his work.
Bill is one of my closest buddies. He's a great guy, and he's up in New York right now for a bit, so we really miss him in town.
Very good. Good. That's quite the literary hotbed. You got a nice community down there, don't you?
For sure. We've got a great collection of writers here. I mean, and in fact, you know, it's funny, people locally, I don't think they really know that so many great writers, like you mentioned, Bill Boyle and
Michael Ferris Smith
is here, and list goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. I think some local people don't know how well known they are outside. You know, sometimes they refer to them as local writers, and I say, no, these guys are bigger than that. And they're
terrific. You don't understand. They're big. You don't understand.
They're big, exactly. But they're great. They're good. They're also very good friends. They're two of my closest pals.
That's good. That's good. It's nice. Do you run your stuff by them and vice versa? Or how does that work? Or do you try to stay away from that?
You know, not really. I have to admit, we don't probably talk a lot about, I think it's something with, I think maybe with Michael is actually going to do something where he's going to interview me for the book coming out next next week. And right. So, you know, sometimes we'll cross on events like that kind of thing. You know, something may come up and say, hey, I've got a new title on the book. What do you guys think? But not a lot of detailed craft talk. I think by the time we see each other at the bar, we're so sick of writing and so tired of dealing with it that at that point we're just like, you know, yeah. anything but writing. So we talk about movies and we talk about other people's books and music and that kind of stuff. So that's right, that's usually where it heads.
You know, speaking of music, I was listening to your Spotify. Did you put together that playlist for this book? Don't Let the Devil
Ride? I did.
Okay.
I'm glad.
All right.
It's a work in progress. So
where's where's the Charlie Daniels? Come on, you got a nice reference in the book to Charlie Daniels. Where's the hell is the devil in Georgia? Come on.
You're listening to the Quinn pod, the playlist, not the is that the Tippahaw County playlist? Oh, no.
It's the whatever one you
tweeted for the
out.
Don't Let the Devil Ride?
Yeah, for Don't Let the Devil Ride. There's no Charlie Daniels on there.
Well, my characters, once you get into it, they're not listening to a lot of Charlie Daniels.
That's true. I guess it was just wishful thinking on my part. I did have to listen to that song after here. You did that. I did enjoy the great vitriol. There was a character in the book brought out for Dave Matthews, I think was described by the daughter in the book as being shitty, sad sack music, which is pretty much spot on. So I appreciate it.
Hey, cheers to a fellow Dave hater.
Fucking hate that guy. He's the
I
worst.
Just I have never awesome. I feel like as a, in 2024 I feel vindicated because I've been fighting for this anti-Dave movement for a long time. There's a little bit in there about Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah,
that's so comically funny. But I have to say, I have seen Darius Rucker live, and I have to admit he's fantastic. So
he looks like a kind of guy it'd be fun to see live. Yeah.
Oh my God, he's amazing. You know, and yeah. I unbelievable. But and this is something more information you want to know. But years ago, before Dave Matthews was famous back in the 90s, I was the head bouncer at one of his concerts. So I had no choice but to endure the music for several hours.
And that was fans, worse than, I'm sure his fans are the worst as well.
Yeah. Well, there was college students at the time, so it wasn't terrible. Oh, okay. But okay. I think probably now they are the worst, yes.
Yeah. I can't think of Dave Matthews without thinking about that tour bus story. Do you remember that? The tour bus goes over, they were going over the bridge and they emptied their toilet or something over the bridge and they had landed on a boat going underneath or something like that.
I remember something vaguely about this. One of those tales from the tour bus kind of crazy stories. Yes.
Yeah.
As long as it wasn't, could have been worse. It could have been the music.
Nice. Either way, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Anyway, Ace, let's talk about your book. Wow, what a tale. I love this one so much. Don't let the Devil Ride. Absolutely. This is a tale of Scatter the Monkey, Colonel Sanders, and a double-crested dragon. Good God, Ace. What was it that inspired you? I love that double-crested dragon. I need to,
I cannot divulge my secrets. Yes, that is I will talk about anything else, but the double-crested dragon.
We don't
want to
talk about the double-crested dragon.
It is a patented secret. All right.
What was it that inspired you to write this book?
You know, this is kind of a mashup of all the things that I'm really into. And I hope that readers will follow me there because I feel that first and foremost, as a writer, you've got to take on a story that you're really passionate about, that you're into, that is enjoyable for you to write, characters that you like, and a story that you're going to be wanting to spend time with for, you know, a year, year and a half, 2 years. And so that's really the whole genesis of this entire novel, which is to write something about, you know, write a story that I was into, write a story with characters that I really liked, and all the elements that I'm into, soul music, spy fiction, the city of Memphis, Elvis Presley, old Hollywood, all that stuff. It all went into the hopper, you know, and then came out Don't Let the Devil Ride.
Yeah, and I felt that in this book. It felt like a labor of love. It just felt like so many fun things, and it seemed like that was stuff you're into. Were you able to write off a trip to Memphis? Have you spent a lot of time in Memphis? Have you gone to Graceland?
Yeah, I practically live in Memphis. I'm going to be in Memphis. I'm riding up right after I finish talking to
Oh, really?
you. It's less than an hour away. So where I live in Oxford, Mississippi, which is North Mississippi. But that's my hometown, but my home city is Memphis. So Memphis is where you go to, where I go to Costco and where I have doctor's appointments. And so the city of Memphis is my home base. So it's like
Oh, wow.
almost like being in a suburb of Memphis, really, where I am.
I had no idea. I am so geographically inept. I did not realize how close Memphis was. How and I didn't also didn't know. I learned, listen, Ace, I learned a lot from your book, and I appreciate that. One of the things
Well,
I
you
did
learned
not
about the
know,
double-crested dragon. You got that.
I learned more than I needed to know about the double crested dragon. Mary Tyler Moore was in an Elvis movie. Is that true?
Change
Wow,
of
I
habit.
had
Change of
no
habit.
idea. Are you a big fan of that? Now, I have never seen, I guess I'm not a big Elvis guy. I'm sorry. I apologize. I now understand if you might have to end
All right, that's the end of the interview. I'm
this
clicking off.
interview right now.
Screen goes blank.
But I've never seen an Elvis movie. I don't know why. It's amazing to me as a fan of old movies. And apparently not as big of a fan as old movies as you are, with all the references in the book. But have you seen all the old Elvis movies? Do you have a favorite?
I haven't seen all of them. I mean,
Okay.
some of them are quite good. I mean, some of them are classic film. I mean, you talk about a movie like, King Creole, is directed by, Michael Curtiz, who directed Casablanca, and
Oh, sure.
Walter
Wow.
Matthau is in it. And it's a black and white art film. Essentially, it's a beautiful movie. It's great. And then, Viva Las Vegas is a, doesn't get
Yeah.
better than that. If you don't like Viva
Right.
Las Vegas, I can't help you. I mean, Anne Margaret, so much fun, race cars. It is the quintessential Elvis movie. But then some of the movies are horrible. There's things like Kissing Cousins, and you could see where the budget is really dwindling at this point. It's at the beginning he was coming in as being the next James Dean. At the end, it's
Right.
just a cranking of machine of one
Yeah.
after the other. And one of the last films, Change of Habit's not a bad film, which was his last movie. And Mary Tyler Moore is great in it, and the music is great in it. It kind of went on. I think Elvis knew this was it, so he was kind of a little bit more into it. But there was a film called Live a Little Love, or Love a Little, Live a Little, Love a Little, in which he is slow dancing with a guy in a Great Dane costume. And that probably was the lowest point of any Elvis movie, where you're sitting there watching a film and you're going, am I seeing this? There's a Great Dane in the film, but at some time it gets switched. He's having a dream with a guy in a Great Dane costume and they're slow dancing. And I thought, boy, Elvis, this had to be when he got off the set. He was like, hey, I'm done with this, boys. Let's take it back to Memphis. Memphis.
It. Give me Scatter the Monkey and let's get the hell out of
That's
here.
it. Scatter, load up. Let's go.
That sounds like a writer or a director or somebody who just wanted to see how far they could push it. Can we could it could, can we get them slow dancing with a Great Dane?
And they did it.
Wow.
And knowing Elvis, he just said, okay, yes, sir, I'll get it.
Yeah,
He was such
sure.
a
Yeah.
great work ethic, and yep, I got it, sir. I'll slow dance with that dog.
Bring me the dog. Let's go. Now, once again, you're so great at writing dialogue, and we see examples of that in this book. So funny. I don't know how many times I slapped my knee while reading this one, which I always
Oh, that's
appreciate
awesome. Thank you.
your humor, and it comes
Thank you.
through a lot in this book. Absolutely. But when you write dialogue, how does that write for you? Do you read it out loud? You got a nice you got a nice voice I'm listening to right now.
Well, I don't I used to when I first started writing, there was a mentor of mine recommended that because my dialogue when I first started, I think was so horrible. He said, do you want to read this out loud? You might, in a nice way, you might see what you're doing wrong. No, I think that's really what I enjoy doing most. I love the dialogue, and I appreciate you mentioning the humor in the book because I think
So
sometimes that's
funny.
something people, I can tell they haven't read the book or they don't get the book, that the humor is everything. I mean, if you don't have a sense of humor and you're reading this book, then don't read it, read something else. I mean, it's written for people who have, if you don't have a sense of humor, I mean, this ain't your book, and that's
Right.
first and foremost. So I of course learned a lot from reading authors that I admired so much, like, terrific dialogue writer Robert Parker, the greatest Elmore Leonard, who was a buddy of mine years ago,
Oh,
and
wow.
so I George Higgins, and so that's that's where my background comes from.
Yeah. Are you just kind of in tune to people as you walk around? Like, how do you pick up on that? And you're still, you, I mean, it, you just, it seems, it's amazing to me that you say when you started out, your dialogue writing was terrible and it had to be pointed out to you. And yeah. You know, it's always bad when they try to do it in a nice way.
I mean, I have somewhere, so my writing mentor was a wonderful writer named Tim Green, ex-NFL football player that ended up writing several thrillers and
books.
And he's one of my best friends.
And, Bengals? He played for the
Falcons. And he was a wonderful, he's a wonderful writer. And I don't know why the hell when I was in college, he looked at my manuscript. And I don't know why the hell I would have even given him this thing. But I learned so much from, he really took the time to you know, give me the great criticism. But I think that not only that helped, that early, you know, edit, but also working as a newspaper reporter. And as a newspaper reporter, you are transcribing and you're transcribing. And that's where, you know, the George Higgins school of thought comes from is, you know, he as a journalist and also as a prosecutor had to read transcripts and transcripts and transcripts. And I did too. You know, I had to not only write down what people were saying, but I also had to go to court and listen to that or look at police files and look at exactly how people talk. So that really tunes your ear too, is listening to not the way people talk in books or in movies, but as they do in real life. So I feel like that's part of my job.
Gotcha. I am actually embarrassed. I am an Atlanta Falcon fan. That's my team. So I did forget that Tim Green did play for the.
Well, you'll have to go back. And Tim was there in the late 80s, early 90s, but one of their all-time greats. Fantastic guy.
Nice. You were a big football player yourself. I'm sorry to say I'm a Florida State grad, so I don't know if we have to end
that's
the
okay.
call.
I like again. Florida State.
You played for a Bowden, right?
I did. So that's almost like going to Florida State. You have a Bowden as your coach. You're kind of honorary Florida State guy. And probably my favorite coach of all time is a guy named Todd Stroud. And Todd was a nose guard for Florida State, All-American nose guard back in the 80s. He was my coach at Auburn. And I just had a nice visit with him down in Miami where he's a defensive line coach for the University of Miami. But he's a big Florida State guy. And I've got my nephew went to Florida State, so I like it down there.
Okay, very good.
And Burt Reynolds. You know.
I mean, yeah, we got a whole dorm named after him, Burt Reynolds Hall. So I mean,
that's right. I think it maybe was condemned at some point, but I think that you know it may not. I don't know if it's there anymore. But Burt, if you can claim Burt as alumni, then that's a hell.
You're doing pretty good. I was looking at the there's memorabilia mentioned in this book. And I was looking at your the special SI. You tell me you got that. Why I don't? How come I don't see that SI cover behind you with you sacking Danny Werfel?
It's funny. I think I signed a lot of them years ago. We were talking about a long time ago. We're talking about three decades ago, and only recently did I get my own copy. And the former sports information at Auburn sent me a message. He said, "I'm sure you have a ton of these. Do you want another one?" He said, "I was cleaning out my crap." And he said, "Do you want this old one?" And I said, actually, I don't have one. And so just recently, my friend David Housel, who used to be the sports information director at Auburn, sent me a nice pristine copy of it. So, but I don't have it. It's not hanging in my office or anything like that. Here, it's just pictures of Elvis and Burt Reynolds and Michael Caine. That's pretty much it.
But Michael Caine, really? You're a big Michael Caine guy?
Oh, Michael Caine's the greatest.
He is,
Michael
isn't Caine. He?
If I had a few cocktails, I'm drinking coffee right now. I would just do the rest of the interview as Michael Caine, but not quite prepped for that today.
Yeah. Did you see The Trip where they're, is that the name of the movie? The Trip where they do the dueling Michael Caine. So that's so
absolutely genius. One of my
favorites. That's a good one. Favorite Burt Reynolds movie? What do you got? Cannonball Run? What are you going with? Bandit? What do you got?
I mean, Smokey the Bandit is just pure joy and one of my all time favorite films. But as far as a Burt movie, I really like Hooper. I think Hooper is an underappreciated film.
That is, yeah.
And I sadly went to go see the Fall Guy movie just a few weeks ago and I didn't enjoy it. And I thought, boy, you know, you want to see a great stuntman movie, watch Hooper. And Hooper, I think, is another kind of what I talked about, the quintessential Elvis movie. I think Hooper is the quintessential Burt Reynolds movie. And I think that was where it works on an acting level and a stunt level and fun as well.
Yeah, it's a shame he's not around anymore because I feel like mustaches are really coming back. I'm a big.
If you had gotten me last year, I had the full. I had the full Tom Selleck brushy, and you know, I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun, and my wife tolerated it. But it, I look back at pictures from last year, and it aged me about 12 years. You know, I wanted to look like Bert, but I think I ended up looking like Wilford Brimley. So it was, it's gone.
No, it's gone, you know, you can't go Brimley. You can't go. There's no coming back from Brimley. You don't want
to. I had the oatmeal in it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. better him than Colonel Sanders if you're going with food, and you do reference Colonel Sanders. I didn't know. There's another thing I learned in this book, and thank you, Ace, appreciate that, always delivering with the knowledge. He didn't make his first million until he was 65. Good God.
You know, it's funny, when you first mentioned that, I thought you were misstating the colonel. I thought you were misstating Colonel Parker.
I had forgotten about the reference to Colonel Sanders
and the up with your bootstrap story about Colonel Sanders not making his first million until whatever, he's 50, 60 or whatever, and peddling around with his crock pot full of chicken.
There's a great.
That's where I'm losing my audience right there is. Serious thriller reader is reading, you know, loves James Patterson, is going through it and get to the Colonel Sanders pulling up by your bootstrap story, and they are out of there.
That's when I just started getting into it, though.
I think for certain people with a sense of humor, this book is going to hit. But again, I should have a warning label for some people, expectations. It's not going to hit for them.
You know what I say? I say screw those people, Ace. They're not deserving of a book like this.
Could not agree more.
I did love the character of Joanna. One of the many, so many. You know what? These characters really pop. They're so colorful. They're interesting. They're fun to read about. Now, Joanna is a woman who once had a part in an Elvis movie, and she's still cashing in on it. What inspired her? Where did she come from? Was that just your love of Elvis?
Living here, outside Memphis, and seeing Elvis week every week, and then also Elvis's birth week, and just Elvis festivals in general, you will see people coming to town that are old Hollywood stars, and you'll see people that worked with Elvis. You know, it could be, and now, you know, it's really dwindling. Back then it was, you know, you'd have a top notch, you know, now it's somebody who was a grip on an Elvis movie is now, you know, top notch. And that's what this book is set, you know, 14 years ago. It's set in 2010. Mm-hmm. And so the character Joanna Grace, and Joanna is based on several different people that I've seen come to Memphis over the years, and somebody who certainly her whole business is that she knew Elvis, that she had been in an Elvis movie. And so she does meet and greets. She has a self-published book about her time with Elvis that she peddles. She does, you know, parties if somebody will pay her to come to do it. And she's really living by the skin of her teeth. And this woman had been essentially the it girl back in the 1967, 68 in Hollywood. She would have come over from London. She would have been very young. She would have been working with all the top people. And she had the chance of being in this Elvis movie. And then, of course, as you see with Joanna, her career never really worked out. I mean, she ends up doing like horror movies for Hammer back in London and these awful films. And so she's still drawn to the part where she knew Elvis. And she was a great character. I mean, she was just, I knew a lot of women, like I've met a lot of women like Joanna or come across them. And I wanted to write about her. I thought she lived a fantastic life.
She was a lot of fun. And then you have another character, Addison, a mom. Now she references a belief that mothers such as herself were, quote, the safest rage outlet for adolescent girls. Now, my wife and we have an adolescent girl ourselves. She would say that is spot on. But I loved how every character had their kids running through this whole book, and parenting plays a big part in that. Did you draw on your own role as a parent in writing this?
I do. I don't have a daughter. I have two sons, we have very close friends who do have daughters, and I wanted to make sure that the parenting was specific and accurate, because how often do you read a book where or see a film where a character has children and then all of a sudden they're like, well, you're going to go stay at your uncle's house and then we're going to continue on with this story. So don't worry about it. So right. I wanted them to be directly.
Not the way it works. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted things to be a little bit messy with Addison. I think for the surface level of somebody maybe getting into Don't Let the Devil Ride, when they look at kind of a serious cover and they look at the jacket copy, you think that Addison maybe is a woman who is, she is very frustrated and she is very upset by what her husband hasn't told her. And what who he really is. But at the core of it, she doesn't really like him. You know, it's not a story of, you know, I'm looking for my husband and, oh my God, you know, this man is the love of my life and what will I do without him? And there's not an easy answer. There's another book that came out that I didn't know about that came out, I think, last year that had a similar premise with a missing husband, that kind of thing. But I think ultimately it was all about the husband being a great person. It was just misunderstood. It looked like he was maybe doing something wrong, but he was really a great person. Well, I'm not gonna, you know, it's not a spoiler alert. Dean McKellar is a terrible person. He's the worst husband of all time. And I'm not telling anybody this. So I wanted the parenting to be real. I wanted it to be messy. I didn't want it to be cutesy. I wanted to be problematic. And I wanted the husband to be a real a-hole. And so that's where that came in.
Nothing greater than the scene of her watching her kid's soccer game and she's half in the bag because you can't. Thank God. I don't know. Thank God that my daughter doesn't have any athletic ability because I didn't have to sit through these little league or soccer games or, you know, all day long Saturday or God forbid you got to drive to another state and watch these league things. But Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I would. I think if I had to endure quite that, I mean, I have to endure similar situations, but. You know, you can really cover up a lot in a, you know, in a coffee mug.
Yeah. And they're all drinking. I mean, sure. they're all drinking. We got a park right up here. I go running past it all the time. You see them with their coffee
at 8 o'clock at night. Sure.
Yeah. Right. It's the only thing that makes it tolerable is a little alcohol, for God's sake. All right, Ace, it's time now for our segment we call Six Quick Six. These are six quick questions, which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
That I finished or I'm currently in?
Either. Something
memorable. I'm watching Shogun right now. And I think it's terrific. So I'm deeply in the Shogun mode.
You got a samurai? Are you a samurai guy?
I've got a samurai sword. I'm wearing it here in the Oxford Square at the hockey round. Some people have stared at me, but I am full out. I'm in James Clavell.
Good. No, you got to commit. If you're going to go in for it, you got to commit. Walk around with the samurai sword.
100%.
As long as that's not cultural appropriation, is it? We don't have to worry about that, do we?
Not if you take it seriously.
Perfect. How about this, Ace? What fictional world or place would you like to visit? And we'll let you back in. So don't worry if it's too dangerous. You can come back in. You pop in for a quick visit.
No, I think I am a big Star Wars fan. So I think that I would venture to a galaxy far, far away. I think that's my childhood dream. Anything related to Star Wars.
Nice. We just got a puppy. We're getting him online, but the whole litter they were named after Star Wars characters.
So
we got Luke. We picked Luke.
That's great. I was worried you were going to say Jar Jar Binks, and I thought,
now, good God,
turn the puppy. If the puppy's named Jar Jar Binks, that is not the puppy. But if you got Luke of the litter, you're doing great.
Yeah, we got the fourth pick. And, you know, all the spotted ones went 1, 2, 3, of course. Yeah. And then we got we like the personality of this one. I think we got a good one.
I think if you got Luke, that says a lot.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go with Teddy. We're going to change the name, Ace. So I'm sorry to tell you. No. But, you know, okay. How about this? Ace, give us one of your favorite, you can't say an Elvis movie, sorry. Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
I think
got a lot of movies referenced in this book, by the way. I loved all the old movies you referenced.
I think Face in the Crowd with Andy Griffith from the 1950s, Patricia Neal. It says it is one of the quintessential American films that says so much about American society and mob mentality and cult obsession. It's funny, it's tragic, it's crazy, and it still holds up today. One of maybe my maybe one of my top three.
Wow. All right. I'm not aware of that one. I had to look at that one.
And it's in shot in Memphis. Much of shot. Yeah.
True to the brand, Ace Atkins. True to the brand. Okay.
Yes.
I like it. How about this? Give us a favorite book of yours. A little bit tougher.
Oof, these are not easy.
No, they're not. These are the hard-hitting questions you can come to expect from us.
You know, I would go with, you know, I normally would say, okay, you know, I'm in Oxford, Mississippi, and I would tell you a Faulkner book. I would tell you something like The Reavers or Intruder in the Dust or something like that. But I tell you who I really, the latest, I would say one of my top books I've ever read is a fairly new book, is a book called God in Ruins by Kate Atkinson, this wonderful British author. Yeah. And I think she's maybe one of the, if not the greatest writer working today. And it's tragic and it's funny and it's brilliant. And she has it all. And if you haven't read she also has a crime series that, you know, as they say, transcends the genre, which I always hate when people say that, but it is much more than a crime book. But her Jackson Brody books are just fantastic. So I'd say that's up there, one of my top five.
Yeah, she's great. And just like you, her books are funny too. So many books, I'm sick and tired of picking up these thrillers that are so dry, or the heroes are so stoic, and there's no humor in them. You gotta have, I don't know, how are we gonna get through life? We can't laugh, for God's sake.
I cannot deal with it. And I don't, I think that's why I really admired those writers who I mentioned before, like Parker and Elmer Leonard and Higgins, is they were always fun. And you know, for me anyway, that's the world that I'm drawn to, and the tone that hopefully I'm accomplishing.
All right, how about this? Ace, when you're out at the bars, hitting the bars with your writer buddies there, Bill Boyle and whatnot, do you have a go-to karaoke song? I'm guessing
there's I'm going to disappoint you. No karaoke in Oxford. Or if there is, I would be there with some college students, so I think it might look a little weird, you know, 50-year-old hanging out in the college students doing karaoke. But I will humor you, and if I were to do it, I would go for Thunderball by Tom Jones.
Mmm! Oh, nice. I like it. And there's a little Tom Jones reference in the book as well.
Yeah, I love Tom Jones.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah. And finally, Ace, what book are you currently reading?
I am reading a terrific book. It is by a friend of mine, but somebody who I really like their work very much, is a woman named Lisa Unger, who lives in Florida, but typically writes about Manhattan. And her books are fun and funny and have a wry sense of humor. And I always joke with Lisa. I always, you know, have fun when I'm reading. It's kind of like if you've seen the show Only Murders in the Building. It reminds me very much of that. It takes place in a huge, old, classic Manhattan building. And she does. But I always joke with her. She always has a male character who meets a bad end when he's wearing sweatpants. And he's lying around the house in sweatpants. And I know that son of a bitch is about to get murdered. And I told Lisa, it has bothered me and haunted me so much that is in her books, that I have quit wearing sweatpants because I know what my wife is thinking.
You're going to get murdered. Good God. That's hilarious. Yeah, she's great. We talked to her. I've got that book on my TBR. I'm excited to read that one.
That's great. Awesome. Yeah, it's really enjoying it.
All right. Well, Ace, absolutely loved your book. Let the Devil Ride. So good. And keep working on that playlist. God sakes.
I am updating it. I will update it very soon. But thank you for reading the book. I'll be honest with you. A lot of times I do podcasts and talk, and we talk very generally about the stuff. And I appreciate you getting the humor, because that's first and foremost for me. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Good stuff. All right. Have a great day.
Cheers. Enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Yep. Bye-bye. The Inside Flip. All right. There you go. Check out that book. A lot of fun. Don't Let the Devil Ride. All right. Let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Well, let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule, private school, never miss on a church.
All right, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called Sipsworth. So Sipsworth, all one word.
Okay.
I'm going to butcher the last name. I should have looked up how to pronounce it. Simon Van Booy, B-O-O-Y.
Simon Van...
Yeah,
boy.
That's right. Yeah, that's boy. Right. That's what? Right. You got it.
Okay.
So this is an absolutely beautiful story. It spans 1 week in the life of an elderly woman named Helen. She has returned to England. She's born in England, but she's returning to England after she's lived most of her life in Australia. Her husband and her son have passed. She is very much alone. She seems very much alone when you first meet her. And she also seems to be just kind of waiting for death.
Mm.
The way her thoughts are framed, the routines that she has, that type of thing. So one night she sees a neighbor across the alley put something out to the curb for pickup. She's curious. She can't sleep. She goes out in the cover of darkness and she takes it. And it's an old aquarium with some boxes in it. And the item on top catches her eye. It's something she bought for her son many, many years ago. And it brings back host of memories. And so this book is filled with memory. You know, she's an older person. She does live in the past a lot. And the author, I thought, did just a really wonderful job of almost just writing in such a fluid way of having her slip into the past in her mind. And then it comes back to the present. And it was so natural. And it's how we all think that way. We just go in and out throughout the day, yep. right? And the older you get, I imagine the more the past becomes more omnipresent. So in the boxes in the aquarium is a mouse that she accidentally brings into her home. She noticed this mouse the next day. So this mouse is a catalyst for Helen. Without giving anything away, because it's not a very long book, this is a sweet and charming story.
Hmm.
It is heartwarming. The title of the story is The Name of the Mouse.
Ah, yes.
Sipsworth. And I highly recommend it. It's short. It's set over the span of 7 days.
240 pages.
240 pages. Yeah. It's so good.
No, is there magic or anything?
No. Yeah. Realistic fiction. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you ever have a pet mouse?
We have, and so no. We did. Remember? We had a hamster.
Oh, I guess, yeah. I guess a hamster.
I think they're similar. So, no, I never would. Good. Although, this book makes you want one.
Really?
No joke.
Huh.
It makes you want one.
All right. And there's no magic in there?
No magic at all.
But, yeah, you still want this. I feel like if you're going to have a mouse, it's got to do some kind of magic.
No, there's no magic. Hmm.
Yeah. So we had a friend in high school, mm-hmm. and it was a girl, you know, smart.
You guys had a friend girl. That was a girl.
It was a girl.
Well, I'm saying. But she had a pet rat.
Oh.
And, who's that?
I don't remember her name anymore, but.
I remember she was good looking.
And so, but she used to have the rat ride on her shoulder. And it would basically, her hair was long enough that you couldn't see it. And, you know, and the rat was, the rat was basically
was
always
white,
there.
Was it a white rat?
I don't think
Please
so.
Tell me. Oh,
I don't think so. And so you couldn't tell, you know, the rat was there. And so I think this is probably maybe the beginnings of telling that this person was
the Sipsworth
this
story.
Person was going Sipsworth. Off the rails.
Oh, that she, yeah.
Right.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, rats are highly intelligent.
Yeah. I'm still not going
to I mean,
have
I'm
one.
Throwing my hands up in the air
because
I wouldn't have one either. Having lived in New York City, no.
Yeah,
no.
Definitely not after living in
And
New York.
You lived in Baltimore. No,
oh.
no.
Oh, man.
Wharf rats.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Well, there you
I
go.
Love Sipsworth. This book.
Love it.
This
Sounds
mouse
good.
Is not gross or creepy.
Okay, right. Yeah. I don't know why we got off. It's easy to get off the rails when you start
talking
about.
He's a cute little mouse. Like, think Stuart Little.
Oh, okay. Delightful. Yeah. Very good. Okay. And that's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
My book this week.
Dave Medicus.
So, you know, as we documented on the show, we just took a little vacation to Vancouver Island. So while we were there, I looked up books by authors that are from there and found this one. Chevy Stevens is the author's name. She lives on Vancouver Island, and this book is called Those Girls. And man, oh man, this is a down and dirty survival / revenge thriller. And man, this is one that I just, once I started reading it, I could not stop. It is a story of three sisters. Now, these are three young sisters. When we first meet them, they're being raised by their dad. And his dad is kind of a drunk, and he gets a little abusive with them, both mentally and physically. And one night, a fight between the girls and their dad goes a little too far and gets a little out of hand. and something happens to the dad, and these girls are forced to run away from home. Unfortunately for them, while running away, their truck breaks down in a small town, and this is where they meet up with some other unsavory men, and things go really off the rails. The book is quite harrowing, at times quite vicious, especially in its depictions of the bad guys and their brutal acts, kind of exploring the nature of evil and how it can exist in the everyday. And then Act Two of the books takes place 18 years later, as we delve into whether or not it's possible to start all over again with a new life. But when the teenage daughter of one of the sisters becomes a little too interested in her mother's past, and one of these sisters disappears, well, the girl takes to the road to unravel the mysteries of her mother's past to track down her aunt. But suddenly, everything that was right is wrong again. This is a tense, white-knuckle read that I really found very disturbing. And yet, I just couldn't look away from the page. I had to know what happened next and how it was all going to play out. If you're looking for kind of like a down-and-dirty, mean thriller, Those Girls by Chevy Stevens. Check it out. All right, Andrew.
Down.
What do you got for us this week?
So my book this week is a sci-fi space opera. It is called The Wrong Button by David Collins. Now, I don't know, like, we grew up watching Croft Superstars. Remember, like, it's like weird science fiction shows and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And one of those shows, like, these two buffoons end up in outer space. And they're basically cleaning the spaceship, and there are buttons on the spaceship, and the guy basically says, "Hey, it's time for lunch," and the guy thinks he's saying launch, so he hits the button to launch the spaceship.
That's cute.
Well, this is kind of a sort of a take on that, and I would say this book is a cross between sort of like that book or that TV show,
like a Douglas Adams type of thing, a little bit,
a little bit. And but also sort of like a maybe more of like a modern day like Robinson Crusoe.
Fun.
And so this is sci-fi, but it is the near Earth future. And so this book could take place in our not too distant future, which is kind of nice because it makes it somewhat believable up until a certain point. Right. And so
until that wrong button is pushed.
Well, maybe even a little before that. But so anyways, there's an astronaut. His name is Jerry Anderson. You don't know a lot about Jerry. Doesn't give a lot of background on the people that he's working with. But, of course, they all die in the first chapter anyway, so what's the point? Jerry is an astronaut. They are basically heading back to Earth. They have found an alien spaceship. And so the space agencies have basically made it a priority to take the wreckage from the alien spaceship and bring it back to Earth or the moon to be studied. They have got a very, the most intact piece of the spaceship happens to be a rescue pod that is still intact. It may still even be functional, and they're basically bringing it back. Hmm. On the way back to Earth, catastrophe strikes. A large meteorite basically damaged the spaceship. Jerry, because the crew had eaten some spicy tacos, Jerry is the only one left alive.
Wow.
And he basically is running out of oxygen. And so he has two choices. He can suffocate or he can go into the alien pod and basically take his chances.
That's fun.
Right?
Mm.
So he closes the pod, it activates, and there is a blinking green button.
Oh.
Now, does blinking green mean to aliens from thousands of years in the past?
What it means to us?
Yeah, what it means to us. Maybe, maybe not. And so, the title is, it's the wrong button.
Right.
But is it really the wrong button? Pushing the button does save his life.
That's fun.
Yeah.
It puts him in suspended animation. Now, here's the thing I got to say. I'm thinking about the term suspended animation. Have you heard the term suspended animation?
I feel like
sure.
It.
Yeah.
Right. So it puts you in a deep sleep.
It's like stasis, right?
It's like stasis. Mm-hmm. But why the hell do they call it suspended animation? There's nothing There's nothing animated about you.
I mean, don't understand that either. And also, you're not suspended, are you?
Well, I mean, it's sort of suspending.
It suspends your life.
It suspends your animation.
Suspended animation.
But it doesn't sound.
It doesn't sound like what it is.
No. So anyways, he's in suspended animation for 400.
He's in a coma.
400 plus years.
It doesn't sound as nice when you say they're in a coma.
He wakes up 27 light years from Earth.
Wow.
And the rescue pod has also altered his DNA so he can fit in with the aliens where he's going.
Wow.
And so he ends up basically marooned on a beach, hence the Robinson Crusoe reference.
Oh, fine.
Right, sure.
And so he basically is scavenging. He's scavenging what he can to survive. Hmm. And sure enough, there is another ship that is wrecked. Basically, you know, a real shipwreck. And basically, only women have survived that shipwreck. And so Jerry...
what's Jerry going to do?
Poor Jerry.
What is he going to do? And so what I also tell you is...
Like a Gilligan's Island.
I've come across another type of science fiction called Harem Lit.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the covers for Harem Lit.
This book is not Harem Lit.
Okay.
Right? And so it turns out that they have a shortage of men in this world.
Of course they
do. They had a virus where men just don't live... long enough.
They just don't.
So there's, a 2-to-1 advantage. And so Jerry ends up helping these women on the beach. He helps to rescue them. He helps to get them back to civilization, at least civilization on this planet.
They needed one man to do this?
Yeah. I mean, they were pretty capable on their own. This book doesn't basically, these women were doing fine on their own.
Okay. That was my question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, but they were quite happy to have Jerry, basically to have Jerry come along. And so Jerry ends up marrying two of these women.
And
it's kind of nice, like they sort of form like a commune and they help each other out and they share the responsibility. So this is not like the way this is done is it is like very practical, like you're doing this all for practical reasons. Mm-hmm. And so
he has to.
Yeah. And so some other things in this is, this book doesn't take itself too seriously.
That's fun.
Right? And so it's a good summer read for that reason.
That's great.
There's some humor in there. And, you know, and the author even basically says, hey, you know, I'm don't pay attention to every detail in this book. He's like, yeah, I may introduce a hammer. And guess what? It may not get used for a damn thing.
That's funny.
It might just be a hammer. He's like,
sometimes a hammer is just a hammer.
Yeah. He's like, just read the book and enjoy it. And that's the way it's written. Now, a few other elements to this book. There is an artificial intelligence, not very bright, that was part of the rescue pod.
Hmm.
Jerry unchains him and says, you know, I am freeing you for my survival. You need to get smarter.
Hmm.
And so he basically tells him, go get smarter and come back and help me. And so, you know, Jerry is actually able to introduce more technology, right, to this alien species. And, you know, a lot of times you read books like this, but the alien species is so uptight.
Oh yeah.
That you know it's new technology, it's Withcraft, we're just going to kill you. But this book doesn't, you know, it has fun with it. You know, so here comes alien technology. They've never really they've hardly investigated their own planet.
Hmm.
So Jerry gets to go and start investigating some of the mysteries of this planet. Now, do they discover other mysteries? Absolutely.
Sure. One would hope so.
But this is a fun read. It is a light read. I'm only sad that book two isn't out yet.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but the book is called The Wrong Button by David Collins.
It sounds like a fun read.
Yeah, it does. And I believe this might be the first time you've ever recommended a book where it's not part of a series. So
well,
that's fascinating.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's part of a series, but the other books in the series aren't yet.
First.
Okay. And honestly, the way this book ends, I mean, you really, I definitely want, you know, I'm interested more in the next book.
Always best to wanting more after you read a book than wanting less. Okay, all right. Well, that brings us to the
audiobook
of the week. And my pick this week is Why Fish Don't Exist, a story of loss, love, and the hidden order of life, written and read by Lulu Miller. So this is a little nonfiction book for you. No, Laura, I know
Dave's been hitting me with some facts.
We tried
some fish facts.
We listened to this one, a little bit of it in Vancouver.
We sure did.
And this is really categorized a couple different genres: part memoir, part biography, part science book. And this is kind of an interesting book in that it is about a guy who you think is someone to be admired, and he's kind of built up to be an admirable person as we learn about him growing up. And then we find out halfway through the book who he really is, which, as it turns out, is not a nice guy at all.
Wow.
In fact, a real a-hole.
Wow.
So interesting structure. The man is David Starr Jordan, who in the late 1800s, real guy, obviously nonfiction book. I don't know why I have to say it's a real guy. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, he traveled around collecting fish specimens. He labeled them, he named them, and he became a huge name in the field and actually went on to become the very first president of Stanford University. Great, very exciting author. Build this guy up, and then all of a sudden we find out that this guy was into eugenics. And if you're not familiar with eugenics, anybody who's listening to this podcast is, that's Hitler's favorite field, and he may or may not, this guy, have killed somebody. So we also learn in this book about the... We also learn about the author's life, Lulu Miller. She has an interesting backstory, and I learned a lot about fish, in particular, that they are a lot smarter. Andrew, we got a huge pond out here. Well, not a huge pond. We got a nice
big
backyard
enough.
Pond on the
Wouldn't
other
want
side
it
of
any
the
bigger.
Snack shack. No, a lot of fish in there. They are a lot smarter. Did you know that there are many fish who have outperformed dogs on intelligence tests? Yes. So a lot smarter than you might think. Very interesting book. And let's take a listen to a clip. This is Why Fish Don't Exist, written and read by Lulu Miller.
When I first heard about David Starr Jordan's attack on chaos, I was in my early 20s, starting out as a science reporter. Instantly, I assumed he was a fool. The needle might work against a quake, but what about fire, or flood, or rust, or any of the trillion modes of destruction he hadn't thought to consider? His innovation with the sewing needle seemed so flimsy, so short-sighted, so magnificently unaware of the forces that ruled him. He seemed to me a lesson in hubris, an Icarus of the fish collection. But as I grew older, as chaos had her way with me, as I made a wreck of my own life and began to try to piece it back together, I started to wonder about this taxonomist.
Audiobook of the week.
Alrighty, there you go. Check that one out. Why Fish Don't Exist. And that will do it for us this week. Episode 256 in the books. We thank you for listening. Please, please, please tell a friend. Tell a friend. Until next week, my name is Dave Medicus. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior!
An imagination is great.